We've got a we got a Hindu temple in West Virginia now. We have a number of doctors, professionals that are from India that are there now. And so the fields are white into harvest. Please come, and we need you. I want to touch upon these values, and I hope I move a little faster through these. These are important. If you're coming to do ministry in Appalachia, these values are important. Traditionalism, our heritage, is important. A strong love of the way things used to be. Change comes slow. Now, if you're down in South Georgia, South Alabama, change comes slow, but it comes rapid compared to the way it's going to come in Appalachia. One of the things you're going to find in this little brochure is you can come and make all the changes you want, and as soon as you leave, we'll change them back the way they used to be. Some of the churches I've worked with in Appalachia, when the new pastor leaves, the first church conference afterwards is they vote to go back to the way things were before he came. So change comes slow. You have to walk them through change. It takes a while to introduce a church bulletin in a church that doesn't have one, because outside the church, it's called the menu. And you go to church to get your menu for what you're going to do today. So you have to make change slow. If you don't like the style of music, and folks, I've been in some of the churches with the music service, you sit there and pray the Holy Spirit shows up when you preach, because he's certainly in there during the music service. He's left. It's so bad. I mean, that's just terrible. But you don't touch that. You work with that. I went in one church, had a lady that couldn't carry a tune in the bucket that elected to be the music director. Had another one on the piano that I could do a better job playing with one hand. But I lived with it for about 2 years, because you make change slow. Strong sense of family. Things are deep. Family ties go deep. Blood runs thicker than water. If you offend one member of a family, you can empty a congregation out overnight. Remember, we have no loyalty. Let me give you an illustration. We had a preacher from South Carolina that came to West Virginia, and he called me up on the phone. He said, there is a community sin that I'm going to touch on Sunday. I feel God's called me to do that. I said, don't do it, James. He said, I've got to. I said, don't do it. He said, well, it's a violation of God's word. I said, it is. But I said, many of the people in your church are victims of that. They had no control over it. You deal with this one-on-one. And the sin was that of incest. I said, you deal with this one-on-one. You've not been there long enough. When you've been there 25 years, you can deal with it from the pulpit. But right now, you don't need to touch it. You need to love the people, because some of them are the product of that are sitting in your church. And they had no control over it. They're not participating in it. I said, by the way, is anybody in your church actively practicing it? Did you know? He said, no, but it needs to be dealt with. I said, leave it alone. He took a church that was running in the 70s and 80s. And he preached on incest, and the next Sunday he had 17, and the next Sunday there was one, and the next Sunday he was moving back to South Carolina. And that church has never recovered. And quite frankly, Southern Baptists and that part of Appalachia have not recovered, nor will we recover. It's a sin. But you have to realize that you're dealing with families, and as you approach it, it's better to deal with some things one-on-one. Family, blood runs thick. If you're going to deal with it, build relationships and talk to them in terms of family, and you can reach people for Christ and build a church. They place a high value on neighbors. Now, and working with their neighbors, knowing their neighbors. But having said all of that, you also need to know that often the families in the mountains are very dysfunctional. Let me illustrate this out of my own personal life. Family ties are strong. If J.D. and I were cousins in the mountains, I could say anything I want about him within certain boundaries. Nobody would think anything about it, good or bad. But let my brother here from Bracken County come and say something about him, I'll fight him. He don't have that right. He's not family. My mother and her sister, my aunt, just went home to be with the Lord. But about 20 plus years ago, they had a dispute. two sisters got into a serious dispute. And it was over my aunt having her seventh child. My mother had seven children, but one of them was stillborn and or died prematurely. And so my mother said, well, I had seven. My aunt said something about that one wasn't alive, and that ended up in some bad blood. Now, these are two sisters that love one. I spent more time with my aunts than I did at home growing up. When I would come home to visit Mom and Dad, pastoring in Georgia, Mother's remarks to me was, don't go to Mirley's. Don't have nothing to do with them. If I did, it took about 6 months for things to cool off. I got some blistering phone calls. There was division. But I used to say in teaching cultural studies that let my dad die or Uncle Paul die, and you'll go to the funeral home and you'll see my mother and her sister sitting on the front bench together sharing the same tissue crying. My wife used to hear me say those things, and she'd laugh and say, you're crazy. Your mother hates her sister. I said, you don't understand. Uncle Paul died. I went to the funeral home, and I looked down front, and here looked like one body with two heads, my mother and her sister that couldn't get along, all down there. And I got down front, and they had tissues, and they were just sitting there just dropping their eyes. And they cried, and they hugged, and they loved all the way through the funeral. Then they went back fussing again. How does that translate out into ministry in those areas? It's going to impact how church is done. When I went to Mount Pisgah in Chatsworth, I had two sisters in the church that were bitter. I preached on forgiveness Sunday. I didn't know the Bible had so much to say. Some of it I may have created. I preached on forgiveness and forgiveness and forgiveness and forgiveness until one Sunday Miss Mitty Adams stood up. She was in her late 70s. She stood up. And she stomped her little foot on the church floor right as I got ready to give the invitation. She said, preacher, if God's lived with my unforgiving spirit for 37 years, you better learn to live with it too. That's the first Sunday I knew I had had a hearing. I pastored there long enough to see those two sisters come back together. But you have to understand, while they hated one another, I couldn't say nothing negative about the other one. To them. They would be quick to defend one another. So as you go into the mountains, when you deal with families, walk with caution, because you could be the former pastor very quickly, or your church plant could be shut down very quickly. High value. They like to help each other out. They work, but however, they're quick to invite people in. They're suspicious of strangers. They're suspicious of strangers. I go into places in Appalachia where I have been going now for 7 years. Harlan County, Kentucky is a classic example. If I'm over in the Lynch, Cumberland, Benham area, I'm welcomed as much as a brother. If I go down the Harlan, Everett area, I'm a stranger. I've got churches in that area that still, when I go, I went to preach last summer down in Harlan County, Kentucky. Here's what the pastor said to me. I'm there representing missions. I'm going to preach about missions. The pastor came to me as I got ready to go up. He put his arm around me and he said, brother, I brought you here because the Association of Missionary asked me to. That's a good clue. He said, do not stand behind my pulpit. And do not open your Bible and preach. I said, I thought I was here to preach. He said, you tell stories about missions, but you are not our preacher. He didn't trust me. You know what I did? I stood down front, put my hand on the communion table, said to them, if I could open up my Bible tonight, and I did, I would share with you the story of Paul going back to the church at Antioch and reporting about missions. That's what I want to do tonight. I stood there for the next 45 minutes, told them stories about what God's doing with their cooperative program dollars. I've had that experience a number of times across the mountain. Been going in there for 7 years, but they still don't trust me. I'm a foreigner. They still don't trust me to go in and handle the Word of God in their churches. So you have to build trust, and trust comes different ways with different people. So you build relationships, and you got to look long-term and think long-term. Used to be a director of missions down in Pike County, Kentucky, Carl Boyd. Carl heard me teaching on culture, and I used to have up there 3 cups of coffee, and Carl corrected me. He said, Bill, I've been down in Pike County for almost 20 years. He said, if you move from one end of the county to the other, it's like you're a total stranger. He said, I call it the 4 cups of coffee. He said, IMB has the 3 cups of tea. He says, Kentucky has its 4 cups of coffee. And he said, to a younger generation, that may mean 4 cans of soda pop. I said, all right, tell me about them. This is what he said. He said, the first year you're there, I will share with you out of obligation. I do this because. He said, the second year they're there, I share with you as my guest. I'm getting to know you. Third year, you're special to me. The fourth year, I treat you as a friend. He said, I want to get to know you. And he said, some of our churches, our pastors go into them, and they are there 5 to 6 years before the deacons will even let them in on the deacons' meeting before the deacons' meeting. If you've ever pastored mountain churches, you know there's 2 meetings. There's the meeting before the meeting. And if you've pastored mountain churches, you know there's 2 church conferences. There's the one in the building and the one in the parking lot. And as a preacher, you're never invited to the one in the parking lot. So that's just kind of the way life goes. So he said, I'll share with you. So we call it the 4 cups. The fourth value is the love of the home place. That's what brings us home. That's what keeps us coming back. That's the reason we stay in places that you think, why do they stay there? We're people of the land. Land is valuable to us. We got people in the mountains such as McDowell County, West Virginia, where the government has tried to get them to move out to get work. But that piece of land and all they own is the top 12 inches. They don't own any of the mineral rights, anything below the top 12 inches. They own nothing below them. All they own is those 12 inches of land that's on top. But that's theirs. They're people of the land. And they won't leave that. They hold on to it. It's home. Individualism, very individualistic, very prideful people, very self-reliant. They don't like to take outside help unless it comes from the government. They will take welfare, many of them, but they won't take it from others. When we've had flooding in Kentucky and West Virginia, giving away food has been one of the hardest things that we do, or repairing homes has been very challenging for us. Though through what I do as your missionary, we've done over 7,000 homes. It has taken us a long ways. The first 2 years, we had an uphill battle just bringing in volunteers to do homes. So a core value is this individualism, this sense of freedom. That also translates into the fact that they can be anti-authority. If you watch the news in the mountains of Kentucky or watch the news in West Virginia, you will find that there are people who are constantly stepping outside the bounds of the law and wondering what the law is doing, interfering with their business and what they're doing. So they do a lot of that. Personalism, we try not to offend. We'll go to great lengths, but if we do offend, it can result in a division for life. And let me translate that out for you, perhaps, or flesh this out for you. When I pastored down in Georgia, if somebody gave me a problem within the church, I just went and sit down and talk to them. I didn't do it in a mean, hateful spirit. I just went and sat down and had a cup of coffee and talked to them. Tried to work through the problems and come to a reasonable agreement. And I can think of Mike McGowan. Mike was a retired insurance agent. And Mike was any pastor's nightmare. He'd give any pastor gray hairs. I had 9 of his former pastors call me to warn me about him my first week on the field when I become his pastor. Boy, that really gets you off to a good start. 2 couldn't call me because after dealing with him, he had committed suicide. And I go sit down with Mike. Mike was different. We didn't always agree. But I found a way to work with him. We moved forward. He was a patriarch in the church. But now, in Appalachia, you start moving up into, get out of that southern region, start moving into central Appalachia. You don't deal with people directly if you've got conflict. Let's suppose that I've got a problem with a brother from Bracken County, Bill, and And he and I are over in Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky. Things aren't going. He's done something that's bothered me. Mike knows both of us. I go to Mike and I say, Mike, you know, Bill, yeah, here's what he did to me. What do you think about that? What I have just told him to do is go to Bill, make peace between two of us. You say, that's not scriptural. Well, that's the way you read it. You got to understand, you're reading it the way they understand it in the mountains. Generations. So he goes, and it's not long until he comes back and he said, Bill said, he didn't mean to offend you, brother. Well, next time I see him, we just go on like nothing's ever happened between us. We just move on. But if I go to him, here's where my mother and her sister got in trouble. They went to one another directly when they kept talking to another sister who said, who had spent 20 years in India as a missionary, lives in Atlanta, Georgia, said, you two girls grow up. I mean, you got women in their 50s. It's time y'all grow up. Get over stuff. That's what she said. She wouldn't deal with it. Finally, they sit down face to face, and they couldn't resolve it, and they left bitter enemies. In Appalachian, we deal with conflict. We try to avoid it because if we have to deal with it directly and it doesn't go our way, we become bitter. And I go into churches that are that way in Appalachia. They've had splits, they've had divisions, and I'm working with two right now in Eastern Kentucky. If you put both of them together, right now you'd be a mega church beside of both of them together in this room with 30 people. They both together wouldn't have 20 people on Sunday morning, but they split years ago. They are so bitter and angry. You know what my prayer is? God closes both churches. I pray today He closes them so we can start a church in there to reach people for Jesus. But bitterness comes in. As you get out, we think of people as we're out there. And as we talk about people in the mountains, we look at it in the sense of who you are as a person. So we place great value on that. Modesty. We don't believe in putting on airs. That's the reason if you have a doctorate degree and you're in anything other than a pretty good-sized First Baptist church or a church that has some size to it, it's best to leave that in your desk drawer, not on the wall. You worked hard for it, and God knows you did. I'm not too far from having a doctorate, but when I become director of Appalachian Regional Ministries, I just put all that aside. I work with people in the mountains and some of our ministry centers and smaller churches. That's the first question they ask me. Not can I help them, not am I a Christian, not have I been born again. How much education you got? I love education. I study all the time. But the issue is I've got to be relevant to the people where I'm working in the area of ministry. And so you have to understand it when you get out. The sense of beauty, and you're going to see that displayed through music, crafts. I love to get out in the small towns and go through the little craft stores that are there and look at the way mountain people express themselves. Listen to the music. Mountain music, if you listen to Ricky Skaggs, that's just a modernized sample of it. But you want to hear good stuff, come down to the mountains. His is commercial. You want to hear good stuff, come to the mountains to where it's raw and it's good and it's being fleshed out. And the mandolin string breaks in the middle of the song. And I was in one of our churches the other day and a guy was playing a flat top. No mics, nothing. He was up there playing a flat top. And whether he planned it this way or not, I don't know. But he had that flat top going. And he got into the middle of it, and he was singing praises to Jesus, and he was in a bluegrass twang, and he got into it, and he broke a string. And I watched him just shift his finger. Before it was over, he had popped three strings when that was playing on just three strings, but he was still there. You know, you don't get that by listening to a CD. But here was a guy who knew how to adjust and how to make the changes, and he kept singing. There's a great sense of beauty. Metaphors come out of the mountains. Great sense of humor. However, remember when you talk about the humor in the mountains, we use humor in several ways. It's a defense mechanism. We use humor to hide behind. We use humor to insult you. And when you use humor in the mountains, do not make fun of mountain people if you're not from there. And do not ever use the word hillbilly. The director of missions in Pike County, Kentucky, called me and he says, can you help me understand why the local churches here do not want to participate in hillbilly days? I said, because that was formulated to attract tourists by outside people who moved in to work with the medical college under all probability. The town goes along with it because it's good business. But hillbilly to a person in Central Appalachia is like the N-word to an African-American. It's an insult. Don't use it. We had a pastor that came up from the Carolinas to pastor in West Virginia, and he lasted a little while. And I went over to the church after he left, and I said to him, I said, this was a good boy. What happened? And he said, he called us hillbillies. God didn't have anything to do with it. He just called us hillbillies, and they turned on him. Strong sense of solidarity. Let me tell you how that translates out. Have y'all been through an old-fashioned church conference where it's been a knockdown, drag out? I hope you never have to go through one, if you haven't. But when it comes to church, sense of solidarity, Joe will say to Charlie, the preacher wants this. I don't think we need it. Charlie says, well, I do. Joe says, I'm against it. You going to stand with me? Charlie's going to vote with Joe and against the preacher. Every time. Because if he breaks, he's going to be ostracized. And the preachers come and go, but he may need Joe down the road. We were having a vote in Cahutta, Georgia, and the mayor, who was not a member of our church, didn't like what we were fixing to do. He had more power in the church as a non-member than I had as a pastor after several years serving there. Solidarity. It comes out of the labor union mentality. Even if I disagree, we'll go on strike together. And you got to remember, when I grew up in the mountains, they went on strike pretty regular in the coal mines. They went on strike, started deer season, rabbit season, squirrel season, all other kinds. Strong sense of patriotism. Do you know that from eastern Kentucky and West Virginia, per capita, we have lost more sons in American wars than anywhere than any other part of America? Sons and daughters. If you go into Central Appalachia, make much of patriotism. And be patriotic. If you've got something to say against whoever's president of the United States, let them say it, but don't you say it. If you're not from there. And until you've earned the right to say that. But patriotism, flag waving is big. Strong religious beliefs is a core value. That's one that will get you in trouble. Everybody's religious in Appalachia. From the town drunk to the crackhead to the drug dealer to the prostitute, everybody's religious, but they don't know Jesus Christ. And as you come in, you have to point people to Jesus. Keep your primary objective in mind. My job is to point people to faith in Jesus Christ. So what's going to impact my ministry when I get there? The terrain. And the terrain comes into play in multiple ways. If you're going into Appalachia, those mountains are more than just geographical divides. People on one side of the mountain don't cross to the other side to go to church. People on one side of the mountain don't go to the other side to do business. Walmart is learning that lesson. Walmart is building more stores in West Virginia and eastern Kentucky because they've realized that simply because I have a store in this community doesn't mean this one's going to come and shop with us. We don't care what our prices are. And they're building stores. They will tell you that 7 years ago they wanted to build a Walmart within 2 hours of every West Virginia and eastern Kentucky. And today they're getting that down to 1 hour, and I've been told it will be down to 45 minutes before it's over with because they're realizing people don't cross the mountains to go to church, to do business. When I grew up in the mountains, I was coming out of the era of the coal camps running the mountains, and when my dad and mom were dating back in the late 40s, had my dad decided that he wanted to date a girl other than my mother grew up in a community called, it was down in the Rumble community, R-U-M-B-L-E, just above Ashford, just below Lick Creek. That don't mean anything to you, but in coal camp terminology, that meant a lot. The same guy owned all of that. But let's suppose my dad wanted to cross the river and date a girl from Nellis. In the coal camp days, if Dad crossed the river to date a girl from Nellis, or up in White Oak for that matter, his dad would have lost his job in the coal mines because you don't mess around with your competition. And so that still translates out today. As we try to combine public schools in the mountains, we got schools that need to be combined that are not big enough to be one grade, let alone all the grades. They need to be combined. Economic reasons, educational reasons, a lot of reasons. But they're finding fights. We got folk take them to court over trying to take school from this side of the mountain, this side of the mountain, and make one school out of it. And it goes back for generations. There's been this sense of isolation and community identity. Also, it's this type of isolation that's led to some of the inbreeding that's taken place in the mountains. If years ago, if you couldn't go across the mountain and date a girl, you had to marry someone, you know, you got problems. I got a cousin that's now up in his 80s, and he lives in South Charleston, West Virginia. And I was talking to Doris one day. His name is Doris, D-O-R-R-I-S. And I said to Doris, as we were talking one day, I said, how come you moved out of White Oak and moved to Charleston? I said, the rest of the Barkers stayed over on the creek. He laughed. He said, my dad did it. I said, how's that? He said, the only thing left for me to marry was my sister, my first cousin. Dad said he wanted me to get out of the family. So, and he was being honest. You run into that. It creates barriers as you pastor. Literacy, we've talked about that. But folks, as you come in, know where you are with this literacy issue. Know the reading level of the people you're targeting. Know where they are. Economic issues. Poverty. Oh, poverty is a big issue in the mountains. Know that. If you're going into Eastern Kentucky, West Virginia, Southwestern Virginia, know that one out of five children are going to bed hungry every night in the coal fields. This comes from U.S. government. These are not figures from some religious organization trying to create something. These come from our government amidst that. Down in Colburn, Virginia, this last year, we had First Baptist Church in Colburn decided they would start trying to provide during the summer hot meals for kids. First Baptist run about 40. And R.J. Rose said, I want to provide a hot meal for the kids during the day. He said, they don't have any transportation. They advertised and said, if you want a hot meal and you're a child, you can come to our church at noon and we'll give you a hot meal. First week he did that, had over 220 kids show up every day on average, some of them walking 2 miles one way to get a hot meal. Now, he's got a powerful ministry. By the second week, it was up to over 400 children. Now, God provided for the summer. But you got to understand, you need to know where you are. If you're in Kentucky, you say, well, the Kentucky government provides a way for them to have a meal all summer long. And if you believe that, I've got some land in Arizona I want to say. It's oceanfront property. They say that, but it doesn't work the way they say it works. We went through that this past summer down Harlan County. We've got methods and means to think of ways to get beyond. How you go work with, you go work in low income areas. How would you like to go to Everts, where Gary Craig has led 70 teenagers to faith in Christ first 6 months of 2007? And he works at AutoZone bivocationally because the church does not have enough money to pay. The median income on the south side of his church is less than $13,000 a year per family. The median income on the north side of his church is a little bit better. It's a little over $13,000. Does it help you to know that 45% of Harlan County lives within 15 to 20 minutes of his church? You got to think through that. He went in there, went to work at AutoZone because he said all those old boys got to end up there sooner or later. It's a great way to witness. That's the reason he's there. But he's there working at AutoZone to supplement his income. He pastors a church. If it was in Georgia, he would have staff. But they can't afford to pay him anything, hardly. Just barely get him gas money. Love of the family atmosphere, you need to know that. Churches tend to be small, and it's hard to grow them. And when you get them up above 30 in West Virginia and 40 in Kentucky, they split, they divide. They don't want to be big. And you got to work through that. I run into this in Georgia. I had a pastor church, medium size there, was 50, and I kept bumping up against 50, and I get 50 people, and I lose 20, and I get 50, and I lose 20. But I kept running at it long enough to one day we got up to 70 and then kept going. But you know, there's a sense we want smallness. If you're in a city, that's a little different. Sense of autonomy and independence, you got to know that. They don't like to feel the association or the denominations tell them what to do, or you. Distrust of denominations is there. You need to know that. And Southern Baptists were the world's worst, believing one size fits all. Methodists do it. But one size doesn't fit all. And I learned that in North Georgia. My wife, when I left the pastor to become your missionary, she was thinking back over my years as a pastor. She said, you know, you've had six different styles of preaching. When I go into a church, I study the church. When I was at Mount Pisgah, I did verse by verse exposition. Oh, I love that. I preached through Genesis, and I preached through Ephesians, and I preached through Nehemiah. I preached through Colossians and Philippians. I left Romans alone. And preached through the Gospel of Mark. Man, it was great. And I went to Cahutta First Baptist, the pastor, and I was going to start and take them through the Gospel of Luke. And 8 weeks into that, they had a special called deacons meeting and said, if you preach one more message from Luke, it will be your last as our pastor. You have to make choices. When I went to my last pastor at Mount Pisgah and Ringo, they'd had two pastors, been there for about 20 years, 10 years each, who did verse-by-verse exposition with literation. They literated their literation. I mean, they had it coming out your ears. And I went there, and I liked literation. And then my first sermon, I preached literation, and some of the men said, can we meet you in the back? And I went in there, and there's all the deacons. They said, Pastor, we don't want to interfere with what God's called you to do. But we've had alliteration to the point we just don't want to hear another sermon with alliteration in it. Could you just do something else? And I had to make choices. You had to make choices. So when you go into the mountains, remember that. And I remember one time almost splitting association because I was young, ignorant. Back in 1981, I just come to Southern Baptist life. I was so excited. They asked me to be the M night preacher. Y'all may not know what M night was. That's discipleship night. And I got up and I said, oh, I'm so excited to be here tonight. The message I want to preach tonight is the one that the Baptist Sunday School Board sent and they wanted us to bring. Ooh, I was so excited to have that outline. But man, I had a bunch of people just got walked out because they thought I got my sermon from the... I got the outline from them, but I didn't. I got the skeleton, but I got my own meeting put on it, but they didn't appreciate that. They left. It's a good lesson for me to learn. Left the missionary with a mess to clean up, though. Remember the strong Wesleyan Armenian. I've already touched on that. Strong belief in the King James, music. There's a lack of indigenous pastors. Population shifts. Many places are declining and people are leaving. You need to know that. That will impact how people view church as you come in. If the population is declining, they have a very negative view of the environment around them. Priorities. As you come in, your priority may not be their priority. You go in talking about church planting and you may discover they don't want to talk about church planting. You go in and you start talking about reaching people for Christ. That may not be their desire. Mike Spencer, who's pastored in Oneida, Kentucky now for 16 years, wrote an article recently in his blog on the web that he has resigned the church after a number of years of pastoring because their priority was not evangelism and discipleship. Their priority basically was fellowship. And they didn't want to reach their community. And he fought it for 6 years. And he couldn't take it anymore. And so you need to know that. When I go out into the mountains to work, and it's interesting, I do a lot of what Dr. Payne does. I go out and meet with preachers, meet with pastors in the mountains. I've learned something. If I'm driving out through the mountains, I can drive for 4 hours, show up to meet a guy at 10 o'clock in the morning, and he won't be there. And he lives 5 minutes away. Because my priority is not his priority. I've learned a way around that. Some of you will know my secret now. If I call you on the phone, I'm coming into your area, I say, I'd like to buy you breakfast or lunch or supper, whichever time I'm coming. And you say, yeah, I'd like it. I'd like to buy it. And whatever state I'm in, if I'm in Kentucky, I'll say, Dr. Mikey's dollar is going to buy it. I'd love to do it. I tell you what, where would you like to go? I will not, and this is hard for me. I'm a type A personality, heavy D, heavy I, no S, no C. This is hard for me to do. But I'll say to you, you select the restaurant and you select the time. You see, I've made that your priority and you'll be there. Since I started doing that, I've not had anyone stand me up except one pastor. But I let you make it your priority. I've also learned in going out, the more expensive the restaurant, the more trouble you're in as a pastor. Because you want to get away from your church folk. And I've closed in Greenville, South Carolina, I've closed two churches over $60 a plate Italian meals with your cooperative program dollars. But the director of mission said it was a good move. But they want to go where nobody will find them to talk. Titles are not important. Our population is getting older, and we've talked about that. Our population is a stew pot. It's not a melting pot. You're going to find people of all different types in the mountains, Germans. I was down in Lee County, Virginia, about 6 years ago, eat some of the best German food I've ever eaten this side of heaven. I was up in Cumberland, Maryland. The restaurant has just been closed. It grieves my heart. They still cook German food the way they did in old Germany in the 1800s, except they were using gas instead of wood. But they were still cooking it with the same recipes. Oh, you talk about good eating. Now, I love good crowd. But, man, I thought I'd die and go to heaven. I got hold of that crowd up there in Maryland. It was good. When I was down in Lee County, and Larry Eakes took me out to a German restaurant, and the lady was German that was cooking, and she said, this is going to be as authentic as you can get in America. Boy, it was. I made several trips there to visit Larry, just eat at the restaurant. Didn't really have any ministry to do, but you need to spend some cooperative dollars, so I went. Italian? Oh, my. Up where Mike serves, we've got some families up there that still cook off of old family recipes out of Italy, own restaurants. You go in there and get pasta like you've never had pasta. It's not been Americanized, folk. You can get some good stuff, and it's good. The Coalfields, the Scotch-Irish, the Welsh, that blending, the Polish, we've had that, the European, the African-American. And in the Coalfields, you come into the Coalfields, in parts of the Coalfields, there has been a blending of races for years. I didn't know what racism was until I moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee. I didn't know. If I'd went two counties over, I would have learned. But where I grew up, African-Americans were intermarrying in our family. Been doing it for generations. Nobody thought anything about it. It's different in there. It's a blending and yet maintaining that distinctive identity. We have a blending there. If you're going to pasture the mountains, let me talk about some things here that become very, very, very important to you. If you're going to pasture in the mountains and serve, we are an event-driven people, not project-driven. We show up for homecoming and vacation Bible school and fall revival services. We show up for events. When I pastored in North Georgia, I planned everything around 4 major events a year. Or event-driven. We talk about being ministry-driven in Southern Baptist life today. Be ministry-driven as a person, but event-driven as a church. I could take you to one of the state conventions that I work with that went through a sharp decline in church growth, Sunday school, baptisms, you name it. They went through it. Because that I could take it back to the year that they voted to move from being event-driven to mission-driven. We are an event-driven people. Second of all, we give to projects, not the budget. We don't care about the budget. Budget is just figures to satisfy somebody else like the IRS or the bank. We give to projects. Let me illustrate this for you. I was teaching on culture and had a group of Methodists. And it was with Benson. And as we were teaching this group of Methodists on culture, I was talking about this, and one of the guys there was from Indianapolis, and he started laughing. He said, I've got to tell a story. He said, I pastor 2 Methodist churches. One is a white-collar church of business people in Indianapolis. He said, in that Methodist church, he said, to give you an example, he said the heating and air conditioning was going out, And he said, so I brought it to the appropriate committee. And he said, and for 6 months, it went through the buildings and grounds and then to the stewardship and then back to the buildings and grounds and up to the stewardship. And finally, it came to conference. And he said, almost 6 months from the day, we voted to launch a fundraiser to raise the money to replace the heating and air conditioning. He said, we're still doing that. Now, he said, in that church, we have a budget, and everything goes by the budgets. He said, every meeting I have with the leadership of that church, the first thing we discuss is how are we doing with the budget. He said, I have another church that I pastor in Indianapolis. He said, everybody in that church except for me and my wife are from Eastern Kentucky. He said, down in the coal fields. He said, this church, he said, if you walked into a Methodist church down in Harlan County, Kentucky, it's just like walking into my church. He said, but the budget is meaningless to them. It's an exercise that we do for the district superintendent. He said, they don't give to the budget. He said, every week, I don't know if there's going to be enough money to pay me or not until the end of the day. He said, there's always just enough to pay the bills, but nothing extra. He said, the other week, I got to church on Sunday, and he said there was no air conditioning. He said, we knew we had problems with it. So he said, I just stood up and said to the church that morning, folks, we've had a bid on a heating and air, and it's going to cost us $25,000 to do the work that we need to do on it. And he said, I just want you all to know about it. We'll be calling a meeting tonight to discuss it with the Building Grounds Committee. He said, with that, a woman who was a matriarch in the church stood up and said, I think we need to take care of that right now. I've got $1,000. He said, I watched. He said, in less than 3 minutes, we raised $25,000 in cash. Right there, cash and checks. He said, it was right there. We are project-driven, need-driven in our stewardship. If I'm in a First Baptist church and I'm talking about needs, I will talk about physical needs in Appalachia and then spiritual needs, and I can talk about the physical needs all day long, and when it's over, their hearts are moved. But I have to be careful in Appalachian churches. I've learned this. I was in an Appalachian church, and I shared with them that we had people that were struggling in one of our ministry centers to get food. They didn't hear anything else. When the message was over, the pastor said, there'll be no invitation today. Will the ushers please go stand by the doors? As we leave today, I want you to give. And I walked out of there with $1,300 to buy food with. It's a difference. You have to be careful. Another thing, number 18 I've got there, is matriarch society. Somewhere in here you'll see a slide, and we may glance through it a little bit later. We have more female pastors per capita in Appalachia than anywhere in the world. They're not Southern Baptists, but you've got to learn to work in that society. We are a matriarch society. The man is absentee, the woman rules the roost. And in many of your churches, the men don't say anything unless their wives tell them it's okay. And I don't say that to be on the light side so much. It's just being dead serious. It's a matriarch society. All these ladies saying, I know where my husband's going to go now so I can run him around, boss him. But it's a matriarch-driven society. You have to be able to work in that society and understand that. When I went to Mount Pisgah Baptist Church, the pastor, Miss Pauline Hemphill, said to me, my husband John was chairman of the deacons, and on his deathbed, he told me to take care of my church. I wasn't the pastor. I was the chaplain. She was the pastor. For the next several years, nothing happened in that church without me sitting down and eating free cookies out of her freezer. I've eaten more frozen cookies. And drank more coffee. I learned to dunk them. Maybe that's the reason I'm a diabetic today, eating all the cookies at Miss Pauline's. But you have to walk through that. I say to guys coming into West Virginia, and some of our Southern Baptists struggle with this, if you come into the coal fields and there's a death in the community and you are asked to assist in that and there's a female preacher there, that's not the time to make a theological statement. Because if you do, you just as well as pack your bags and go home. You've lost your church. You've lost your ministry. I've had to share the platform with female pastors. I know what the denomination says. But you got to look at the bigger goal. Am I there to reach people and disciple them and grow? If you've been there 5 or 6 years, that's a different story. You can do some of that stuff. But you can't do it when you're just there and you haven't built the relationships. After you've been there a while, they'll ask you to do it, and you won't have to worry about some of that. But don't use funerals and weddings as a place to make a statement. We're a matriarch society, and that becomes critical. The entitlement will flow out into what people do and say. You owe me. It's hard to motivate people in the rural areas and city areas. It's not as challenging. I hope I haven't overwhelmed you. We're going to move into the preaching aspect of it in the next session. And I'm going to show you some resources. And I'm giving you more stuff in there than I'm going to cover today by design. Because I want you to be able to come and to pastor and plant churches in Appalachia and be effective. I've watched over the years as too many guys have come over the last 7 years and left in a sense of failure. I think of Toby, who came from Southeastern to plant a church, and he never related to the culture around him. And after 4 years of frustration and reaching absolutely nobody with the gospel of Jesus Christ, he left, moved back to North Carolina, and today works as an X-ray technician, out of the ministry, out of the church, angry. But he wasn't culturally relevant. And no one prepared him for where he was headed. I can think of another young guy who came into the coal fields. And he came in with his heart on fire for God. He was going to plant a church. But he wasn't culturally relevant. He made some blunders up front that he could never recover from. And today, he pastors, but he's a pastor that's like a zombie. He functions. He's not the kind of guy that I'd want for my pastor. Though one time he was on fire for God, but he's lost his passion because he was placed in an area where he felt that he got used up and used, but he wasn't culturally relevant. I watched so many young guys come and blow it. So that's kind of the reason I talked to J.D. about coming, and he asked me, but because I want you to be able to come into the area and be successful, to let God use you and to be able to build a church. And we'll talk about preaching. And then we'll wrap it up at lunch. But let's take about a 5 or 6 minute break and grab some coffee, water, run to the restrooms, and then we'll move into the next phase.